Simpkins and Isa Caveggia, a podcast on art, authorship, and anthropology. In season three of this collaborative podcast, one anthropologist specializing in a particular cultural context has a conversation with an artist of their choosing, exploring issues of voice and authorship in art. In this episode, Alex Ungpertier-Flynn, assistant professor at the Department of World Arts and Cultures at UCLA, speaks with Afro-Brazilian artist Aline Mota, touching on themes of loss, erasure, and repair. I will hand over to Alex now to introduce himself and his guest.
Hello, and welcome, listener, to Artery, a series of podcasts on art and anthropology. My name is Alex Ungpertier-Flynn, and I'm an anthropologist and curator at the University of California, Los Angeles. My research explores the intersection of ethnographic and curatorial modes of inquiry, and working collaboratively with activists, curators, and artists in Brazil since 2007, I explore the prefigurative potential of art in community contexts, with an emphasis on how knowledge is produced, temporality, and the social and aesthetic dimensions of form. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest whose work speaks to all of these questions. Aline Mota is an Afro-Brazilian artist whose 2023 exhibitions include Water is a Time Machine at the Sharjah Biennale and the collective show Chosen Memories at MoMA in New York. As of September 2023, her work is on display at the 35th Sao Paulo Biennale, Choreographies of the Impossible. Through her practice, Aline seeks to point out and fill in the gaps in her own family history as a result of colonial erasure. Her videos, photographs, installations, and performances are based on speculative studies that mix archival research, ethnographic fieldwork, and oral histories that she uses to access, nourish, and reveal parts of the past that were previously thought to be lost. Refusing the linear organization of time, and instead understanding the past as part of the present, Aline creates works that reorient memories and construct new narratives. Reflecting on notions of diaspora, belonging, and identification, she reconfigures Afro-Atlantic relations in her own way, positioning herself as the author of her own history. In the blurring of boundaries between what is known and what is imagined, Aline's works demonstrate how envisioning new pasts can free us from old narratives and manifest alternative futures. Hi, Aline. It's really great to be able to speak with you today, and it's a pleasure to welcome you to the Artery podcast. So just to start, could you tell us a little bit about your practice? You're a visual artist, you're a filmmaker, you're based in Sao Paulo, but tell us a little bit about your practice, how you put it together, and also the kinds of things that you're interested in.
Hi, Alex. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you today. I'm happy that we can connect again after, some time. I remember when you used to live in São Paulo and we used to talk all the time. And now you're in LA after being out of places. So it's really wonderful to be in touch with you again and having this longer conversation. And we are going to share our experiences, connecting Brazil and the U.S. I lived in the U.S. too, back in 2001. It was a different time back then. I lived in New York for 4 years. So it's nice to also see your point of view now that that you're a professor at UCLA and how that connects with your time in São Paulo. So how I started, it's been a long time in the making. I'll be 49 in December. In December 2023, we have to mark the time because who knows when people are going to be listening to this. So there's this timestamp. So I worked in the film industry as a script supervisor for 15 years. So I was a crew member working in a variety of films, short films, even a little bit of advertising series. And then I always wanted to make my own films. I had, you know, I can say I had this dream of being a filmmaker. I really had that, but I didn't know how to actually finance it. I think this was a big hurdle for me. When I was when I was 18, 19 years old, you know, that's the time that you choose, you know, your career, or you're going, you know, to school. And I actually studied communications because I thought it was like the most creative thing I could do. I wasn't going into law or, you know, any other thing like that. I thought like communications was broad enough. And at that time in Brazil in the 90s, it took Brazil like about 10 years to start like making films again. In the beginning of the 90s, political situation in Brazil was very bad. And there wasn't a lot of financing. So, you know, coming from like a middle class background, it didn't seem feasible to have a career in the arts or even filmmaking. It seemed like an elite thing to do. But yeah, so I wanted to approach this and I didn't know how to do it. And it took me like 20 years until I got my first grant. And then I think it's interesting to notice that I came from a real industry, like having like so many people, you know, making a film. Sometimes I would look around and be like 100 crew members and 50 like background actors and, you know, and talent and everything. And it would be like, oh my God, this is huge. So when I actually got my first funding and started making my own films, which I'm not sure which category they are put into. Sometimes people call it documentary. Maybe they are personal essays, or I'm not sure. Maybe a little bit of fiction too. And I really wanted to have, you know, my, like, how can you say that? It was very artisanal in a way. I'm not sure if this word exists. I wanted to have my own hands, you know, into it. So I pretty much shot all the footage. I edited. And then after the third film, they're all short pieces. After the third film, I started, you know, also working with the music, the soundtrack. So it's very different, you know, the things that was working, you know, even the themes or how it was produced, and then how I started making my own films or the films that I always wanted to make.
Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the things that I find so fascinating about your practice, well, first of all, it's beautiful. I love your films. I think they're wonderful. They're immersive. They're delicate. They're poetic. And something that is really, I think, fascinating about them is they're kind of the base from which they come. Like, I've been lucky, I've had the privilege to really be with you and think with you in some of the stages of the making of these works. And what I've seen is this really, you know, what I would call an ethnographic engagement that really, I think, is at the core of your work, or one of the things, at least, that is at the core of your work. I remember you told me that you gained funding from Brazilian sources to complete research trips. You completed research trips to Nigeria, to Sierra Leone, to other parts of Brazil, to do the research that was necessary for the making of these films. And over these past years, these films have turned into shows, right? They've become these complex artworks. They've been exhibited all around the world. And just this year, right, there's been this huge explosion of interest internationally in your work. And you've been part of a very important Sharjah Biennale. You've also, your work is in the Chosen Memories show at MoMA, which opened late April 2023. And if you could, like, just tell the listeners a little bit about these shows, like, if you could, like, tell us, what do they look like? What kind of themes do they deal with? This kind of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the Sharjah Biennial. This was totally a game changer for me because especially because of the funding. At once, I've never gotten so much. I think for a film, it might not seem much. And it's a project that I've been working since 2018. I think all my works, like, they take a long time, to be completed. And sometimes even when they are completed, I keep adding other things. And this is actually what's happening with this project for the Sharjah Biennial. It's based on a book. I started also, like, working with literature last year. Like, I released my first book. I think it's a fiction book, but people in Brazil are calling it poetry. So it might be poetry. I'm not sure. I just, made the book that I wanted to make, and people try to put them into, like, boxes. So it's poetry. Okay, you can call it whatever you want. I just want it to be released by just a regular, like, trade publisher and not an artist book kind of thing. This project, I started writing, the words, like literature, pretty much in 2018. It got actually several fundings before the Sharjah Biennial. It got a funding from a Brazilian institution called Instituto Moreira Salles. And then it got a little bit more funding from Proevesia, the Swiss Arts Council. And then it got this bigger fund from the Sharjah Biennial. And now it's being commissioned again by the São Paulo Biennial, the upcoming São Paulo Biennial that will open in September. So is it ready? is the book, the book has been released, but I keep adding things. So, is it ready? is the film ready? Now it's 30 minutes, but I think it's a feature-length film. So it will ever be like an hour and a half, maybe, if I get enough funding and enough exposure. So I think the difference between... 2023 is a very special year for me, having these shows and having the career, really like take off in a big way, Some of my photographs and a video was acquired by the MoMA collection. They have a Latin American and Caribbean fund. And it took them over a year, to actually acquire these works, going through so many board meetings and conversations between curators and, people that fund these funds, these very specific funds, you know, Shaja, it was really a big deal for me, you know, to have this platform. And also the themes that were discussed in this biennial, how that connects with my work. I'm the only Brazilian in the show. It's like 150 artists, and I'm the only Brazilian. So it's interesting to see why this work got picked and not others, right? Why me and not others? It's not that I'm saying that I'm like special or anything. It's just the way that you see this machine. How does it work? You know, why, you know, some artists get, you know, to show their work now, why it took me 20 years to actually do that, you know. The expertise in dealing with institutions, funding, you know, it's how many abilities you have to hone over the years so that you can work, can get to this position, that it gets acquired by institutions, that it gets shown by these platforms, you know. So, yeah, it's been a long journey.
There's, on the website of MoMA, there's a little bit of text about one of your works, which is titled Espaço Preto, parentheses, black space. So this is how they describe it. Attempts to write a history of art from inside the circle of black life are proliferating. Emerging from the long history of black and indigenous cultural spaces, including communities in the periferias or outskirts of sprawling cities, the quilombos, settlements of enslaved people, as well as the religious meeting grounds known as terreiro, contemporary artists and curators are actively shaping the narrative of black Brazilian art. In the past decade, their commitments to mutual aid have shifted the racial discourse of Brazil's most powerful museums and universities and offered a resource for self-organization that dovetails with the structural changes black people have affected in US institutions. In both Brazil and the US, black artistic and curatorial work are characterized by variability and the specificity of their local communities, even as the horizon of possibility is part of a shared global practice. Now, I think there's something really powerful in that text because it speaks about the reach of your work. And there is something that is so relatable, and I feel that many people around the world can empathize with the work that you put forward. In my reading of your work, what I see is a historiography of a family. And yet, of course, what's unique is that it's your own family which the artist puts forward a historical reading of. In your work, you trace the origins of your family. You go through your father's side, through your mother's side. And this journey takes us from São Paulo, where you live today, to Rio, where you were born, to Nigeria, to Sierra Leone, to Bahia, the state in the northeast of Brazil, which is characterized by a different kind of racial demographic. And in this kind of deconstruction of a family genealogy and all the histories that this brings up, you really, I think, touch upon somehow what has been put forward and what has been silenced. What is held up as part of the modernist kind of narrative, the colonial project, and what has somehow been tucked away out of sight. And there's something beautifully poetic about the way you do that. How do you feel about this work that you do? And how do you think people react to it when they see it?
Yeah, this Espaço Preto, Black Space, I think that's how it was called. It was a talk that I did at MoMA. I think it was at 2020. It's nice to be reminded of that time, you know, during the pandemics, and you know, now 3 years later, how much we advanced. I think it's interesting in the States, black artists in the States, and it's not fair to compare in terms of economic power, because it's a very different situation here in Brazil, as you've seen it. I think we need a lot more dialogue and a lot more conversations of how do we approach this subject of a black diaspora. You know, how do we connect as artists, you know, black artists in the States and in Brazil. And I participated in this year in Iowa. It was an event connected to film, and it had a title in Portuguese, which I thought was very beautiful, which was Frequencias, which is frequencies. So, you know, and it dealt with Brazilian films, black American films, and also from the Caribbean, Haiti. There was a filmmaker from Haiti that now lives in Canada. So I think, you know, we're really, I think so many people have thought for this moment for us to be here having this conversation. So we're not like starting any movement or anything. We're just stepping on the stones that people had put forth. But we can advance so much more collectively. You know, I see how many opportunities in the States. I think we were talking about that, you know, American universities. Slowly, they've been inviting me to come and talk to the students and talk to, the professors, and creating a scholarship, you know, for a black diaspora, you know, connecting Brazil, which is this huge country. But sometimes, you know, the States get this hegemonic place, even because of the English language, you know. The English language, it plays such a huge role into that. And the processes, you know, historical processes have been so different, you know, you can't really compare. So, but how can we advance, you know, collectively?
I think that in your work, there's something very interesting about how different worlds, different temporalities, different timelines, different epistemological bases are put into dialogue. Your work often takes the form of multiple channel installation. So there will be three or more panels of video with a complex soundtrack that narrates this experience, both in an ambient sense, but also in a direct narratorial sense. There's often a narratorial position with your work, which I think is really fascinating. We met in Sao Paulo in 2016. And of course, a lot has changed in Brazil, as you've hinted at, since 2016. Like, as we sit here now, 7 years later, it seems barely believable that the last 7 years actually happened. Now, that kind of idea of conflict and the multi-channel, the plurivocality, you know, that, to me, there seems to be a connection there. And I was wondering if you could sort of say a little bit more about, you know, how do these ongoing changes, how have they shaped your work? You know, you've already hinted at this, and we've spoken about the black diaspora across the Americas. You're an Afro-Brazilian artist. And how have you seen things change in Sao Paulo, particularly, or Brazil, over the last 7 years in that regard?
There's certainly be a shift to the right that maybe it has always been there, but they weren't so vocal, or they weren't given a platform to speak whatever they wanted. And it's been a very violent arena of disputing narratives. But it touches on things that are not true. So not based on facts. It's been very hard to navigate. But an interesting thing about your question, I think it's something that also connects with your work. It's seeing things through a broad lens. We all have our practices, you know, I'm an artist, but I feel my work touches on so many different subjects, and I had to, you know, you call it this ethnographic approach. And I agree with that. But it also connects with history, you know, with musicology, you know, or ethnomusicology, you know. We keep on adding these prefixes to, you know, even fiction. Some people say autofiction. We have to add, you know, new words to our practices, because in my case, it encompasses so many, you know, different skills and knowledge that I had to gather over time. So if the work is multidisciplinary, it's because I really had to delve deep into things that I didn't know much about, or things that were silenced, you know. And I feel film is a medium that really supports these different temporalities. With film, you can really like sort of mesh them together. Like you can really accumulate different timelines into one single frame. You know, I come also from still, you know, from shooting still pictures. And I feel every frame in my film, you know, they are really composed in a way to encompass these temporalities, the past, this presentification of the past, and a look into the future. So it keeps bridging or connecting these temporalities through each frame. So as if each frame could contain all these temporalities. We've been talking so much in Brazil right now about a spiral time because of the work of Leda Maria Martins, our amazing scholar from Minas Gerais. And that she really dealt theoretically, you know, putting on paper all this ancestral knowledge about, you know, the time being a spiral and not at this evolutionary linear goal into things, that, you know, you start from one point and you're gonna, you're gonna reach point B, you know, you're from point A and you're going to reach point B, and point B is going to be like better than point A, that you're going to be like more skilled, or, and we throughout history, we haven't seen, it hasn't been that way. When we talk about spiral time, it's like going around the circle, you know, going like mimicking the sun journey, you know, into, you know, the sky. So each time, you know, you're accumulating different things, you know, and it's not linear, this process is not linear, because you're always looking back, you know, into what happened. And that's how I built my work, you know. It seems very abstract when you talk about spiral time. and condensing temporalities. But when you see the work, you see that, you know, the soundtrack is going one way, you know, and then the images, they are really built like a quilt of references and places and putting it all together. So it's a very, you can really sense, you know, that the basis of this theoretical basis of critical fabulation or spiraling time, and even from Patricia Hill's control images, I think that's how is it called in English, or images of control. I'm not sure, I'm translating from Portuguese. All these Black scholars and artists that conceptualized, you know, that put into words their practices, you know, I think you can really connect to what Black artists are doing in general, not only, you know, in the Americas, but also, you know, back in the, you know, in the African continent, you know, how these, you know, our Congo traditions, you know, how they reverberate now, you know, how they've been reverberating over the centuries, and they're still much, pretty much alive. So when people talk about tradition, it seems it's something that is dead or dying or on the verge of dying. But when a Black grandmother is talking about tradition, is talking about the food that she's cooking now, about the way she's raising the kids now, you know, about the way you deal with, you know, the family budget, the family money, you know, what to invest to, how to deal with the land, how to deal with your backyard, you know, being the backyard, you know, the center of a house, you know, the most important place of a house, of a terreiro community, you know, of land, you know, is the backyard. You know, what you should have in the backyard. Our grandmothers knew, you know, what to make of it, what to plant, when, you know, what herb would cure what, you know, which tea would do what to you, you know, prayers. Spiritual connection, transcendence, you know, all of that, you know, I'm saying grandmothers, but, and you imagine an old woman, but there are some kids in Brazil that they are also grandmothers. So this spiraling time is not about the age or the gender, you know, it's about a position that you see life through.
Now, there's one thing that you mentioned before that really interested me, which was that, you know, you worked for a long time outside of, you know, what some people call the art world. You worked as part of a crew. You worked as one of 100 people working on a film. You were a script editor. You revised scripts. You were deeply involved in that world, in that professional practice. And I think the listeners would really like to know, perhaps, you know, in a very specific way, you know, do you remember when you first started to consider yourself an artist? You know, this moment of transformation. I think that when I've spoken to other artists in Brazil, and I'm sure this is something common around the world, there's a moment when people kind of, you know, in Portuguese, you say to assumir, you know, to kind of really take it on board, to own it, that this is what you do. You are an artist. This is your practice. You don't have to apologize for it. This is it. And do you think, can you remember, like, when, you know, was there a particular moment or time that you sort of made that shift?
Yeah, it's interesting because it wasn't romantic in the way, you know, you can't, in my case, you can't romanticize this time that I really said, oh, I'm an artist, I'm a visual artist. You know, it was when I started making money and being a full-time artist. That's when I realized, oh, I think I really am an artist. It's been a year that I haven't set foot on a film set. So yeah, I guess I'm an artist now. And I was like 42 years old. So it's now it's interesting because since I'm delving into other fields like literature, and I see how what an elite field literature is. I think all over the world, but in Brazil, it's the contracts are very damaging to the writers. Maybe I was naive. It's hard to call me naive, but maybe I was, because I didn't know much about it. And now we can see why I didn't know much about literature and the intricacies of being a full-time writer, for instance. Now that I see it, I'm like, wow, how can anyone like publish anything and make a living out of literature? I'm appalled. I really am. I really am. And I want to, of course, I have to do this collectively and talk to other writers about how can we change this landscape? Because I see in the arts, in the visual arts, especially figurative painters, I see that they can make a living, you know, like a black young artist can make a living out of being a figurative painter. Okay, I can see that, and I'm so happy to see young black artists in Brazil making a living out of, you know, the arts. But literature is just crazy. It's impossible. I don't know how can anyone like write something long form that takes you years to do it and such a dedication. I'm not saying the visual arts is like effortless or doesn't take time or research or anything, but to really write something like long form or even an essay, anything, it takes so much craft into, you know, picking the right words and all the mechanics of finding a publisher and everything, you know. So maybe it's such an urgent thing now for me, you know, to see this landscape and try to understand how can we collectively change things. It might seem, you know, naive to say, you know, that we can, you know, change, you know, such a, it's different actors, right? You have the publishers, you have the bookstores, you have, you know, all the other, you know, people involved, critics, you know, how can you engage public libraries? You know, even, you know, the Brazilian government buys books, but what kind of books does it buy? And it has a considerable budget for that. So for me, everything is connected. You know, I don't think literature is not connected with the arts or everything that I do. You know, everything is. So I'm being really thinking, like, how can we make, you know, changes?
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that for you, a voice for an author or an artist is very important. You know, each artist has a voice. But how, you know, do you think of your voice as a very specific voice, or, you know, you've hinted at these kind of collaborative dimensions, but how do you see that, this idea of voice in your work?
I think we go back to the idea of authorship, and it's so interesting in our communities, black communities, indigenous communities, who are the authors of things? Who are the authors of patterns, you know, visual patterns? Who are the authors of song or prayer or dance? Who created that impossible choreography? You know, who created that? What's inspiration? Inspiration seems such an elite thing, right? You know, you have to be inspired. You know, I got inspired to write this book. I got inspired to make this sculpture, like it came straight from heaven. And then the person's like 30 years, you know, trying to, you know, how can I, you know, give form, you know, or how does this just take shape. But I really like this idea of a voice, and also thinking about collective voices and being a mediator of these collective voices, of this collective family, you know, of, you know, having uncles, aunts, grandparents. I was lucky to have my grandmother alive until she was 101. So it was almost 40 years of my life, you know, having this person to look up to. That's how knowledge is passed. That's how art, you know, also an elite word, you know, in my family, you know. We had, as kids, so many parties in my family. And who cooked the food, you know? It was one person who cooked the food. No, it was a collective, you know, effort to cook for that many people. There were performances. We were always, like, putting, like, theater and singing and, you know, and dancing collectively. I remember always gathering, the family gathering together for so many events and celebrating every single advancement of each person's achievement. That person got a job, you know, that person, you know, got into, you know, just, you know, got into the university, that person did this, this person did that, and celebrating every single step, you know, as a collective effort. So my work is going to reflect that collective voice. And although it seems very specific, that is, you know, I'm talking about my specific grandmother, her trajectory, you know, the things that happened to her is very specific. Or talking about my mother, you know, how she passed, the way she passed, why she passed, you know. And then it's just touching this collective, you know, knowledge, ancestral knowledge.
Mm-hmm. I think to finish, I'd really like to ask you about, kind of in a weird way, around temporality, which we've been talking about a lot. But to finish, I'd really like to ask you about where it all begins. So I guess this is a two-part question. The first part is, how do you begin your work? Like, what are the things that inspire you to begin your work? Is it looking at these old family photos? Is it going into the archives and discovering these things which were previously unknown? What is the inspiration for you to begin your work? And then the second part of the question is, looking forward, you know, what are you excited about right now? Like, the Sao Paulo Biennale is going to open this September 2023. It's a landmark Sao Paulo Biennale because it's the first Biennale to be curated by an Afro-Brazilian curatorial team. You are part of the Biennale. It's going to be very exciting. And it would be wonderful to hear a little bit about the work that you will present at this show.
Where it all began, I think it's just, I've always thought that these works would be more like shared learning devices. For me, art and education, they're really like entwined. Sometimes people think about education and pedagogies of teaching. How do you learn something? How does something becomes crystal clear in your mind, in your head? How do you, the understanding of what's happening inside of you and around you, and how can you intervene? How can you react to things? So it comes from that search. To create this, really, a work that could be shared, which is such a contradiction when I see my work in museums, and people have to pay, you know, to get in. But somehow it became monumentalized. It became musealized. It's going to be in a, it has been in biennials. It's going to be the next biennial, São Paulo biennial. So it's inside an institution. Is that the best way of showing that work? Or is just another one of the multiple ways that the work is going to be shown? So maybe that's why I do this performative readings. And it took me a while to actually call it a performance. I just wanted to say, oh, it's a reading with a video mapping projection. But that's too long. So I started calling performances, although I'm reading. Of course, there are intonation and there's a lot of things going, you know, happening at the same time. But it's just, I just want to reach out to a broader, you know, audience. And I feel this very strongly, you know, especially being, you know, from Brazil. And knowing that this work, not only my work, but this discussion that the work is bringing about could be brought to so many more people, you know, to a lot more people. And maybe we would be, you know, making the changes or bringing up conscience about things that we want to change in this country. So it starts from this really, from this urgent feeling of expressing, you know, in a sensitive, you know, way, in a delicate way, as you mentioned, so it could reach people's heart, that thing is alive, you know, that it's that has life into it, that it's not complete, that it's not done, that each person can take a little bit and maybe, you know, create their own narrative or their own thoughts or their own feelings, you know. That thing is just going to sparkle, that either is a film or a photograph or a book or a performance or a text, you know, like a scholarly, more essay-like text. It's just the work just wants to expand, just keep expanding and spiraling, you know. And every time you see it, you're going to see something different because it's so intricate. And it took me so many years to write that single word. It took me so long to reach that very synthetic phrase or, you know, sentence or a proverbial-like sentence. It took me so long to reach that very thin and delicate construction that I hope that is going to have many viewings and many readings. And so I really look forward to having my work shown, you know, in the city that I live in and see how people are going to react to it. It's sort of the same work that was shown at the Sharjah Biennial. I'm going to add a couple more things, more as an installation than just in Sharjah. We had the video and the book that was translated into English. But in São Paulo, we're going to have more things added that's going to look more like an installation, like a real video installation. With other projections. So I look forward to having the discussion, you know, and seeing how far it can go, you know, although it's in the enclosed space and, you know, in a specific city in the world. So I just hope to see the work, like, reaching more and more people and, you know, bringing up things that were not seen.
Well, Aline, it's been absolutely wonderful to speak to you. It's been such a pleasure and it's a privilege to be able to speak in depth about your work. I'm sure the listeners have found it really fascinating to gain this really profound insights into your practice, how you think of your work, how you construct it, how you see questions like authorship or voice or creativity or inspiration. And these more theoretical questions as well, these questions around the undoing, the untying, right, of linear colonial time. So thank you so much for being with us and engaging with us. And hopefully we'll see each other again soon.
Yes, thanks for having me.
This was Artery with Robert Simpkins and Isa Caveggia, a podcast on art, authorship, and anthropology. Thank you for listening. Join us in a fortnight for the next episode in this season on voice and authorship in art.